This is the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the show for real estate investors, stock traders, and business owners. We help you keep more of what you earn and protect what you've built. Let's get started.
Hey guys, Toby Mathis here with the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast and also on our YouTube channel. I have Kareem Hanafi, attorney and head of Anderson's exempt entity group, and we're going to be talking about all the things you can do as a nonprofit. So I know we're going to be going over 10 popular types of nonprofits, but this really focuses it on is what type of activities can be exempt. And there's really two broad categories. There's exempt, doesn't pay tax. And then there is exempt and other people can give you money and write it off as a charitable donation. Those are two very different things. And Kareem's going to go over it today. So welcome, Kareem.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
All right. Dive in, my friend. Let's talk about these types of nonprofits and how they work.
Okay. Just brief intro about myself. I am Kareem Hanafi, nonprofit attorney here with Anderson Business Advisors, and been working in this area for about over 20 years. So 15 years before I joined Anderson, and I've been with Anderson now for almost 3 years. And I like to say that in the 3 years that I've been working here, I've gained another 15 years of experience. And it's because of the volume of clients that we work with. You know, we deal with easily at least one new client each day. And we give them a lot of advice and recommendations, but they also teach us some things too. So we're learning a lot from these clients, and we're taking what we've learned from other clients and helping it and applying it to new and existing clients or future clients as well about recommendations we can give them. So, you know, we give them suggestions to expand on what it is that they're thinking of doing. And in addition, there are many clients that are interested also in forming a nonprofit, but they're not sure what they want to do. So we've come up with 10 popular types of nonprofits. These are the kinds that we see all the time within Anderson, the types of entities that we set up. So these are typically the ones that, and we're going to go through kind of the 10 common types. So the first one is dealing with humanitarian relief. You know, we call it that. It's just assisting and you're supporting, you know, low income families, refugees, women and children, shelters, all of these things. You know, it could be soup kitchens. It could be even toys for children, sports equipment, even balls, for example, basketball, soccer ball, football, anything like that. And it deals, you know, with food, clothing, shelter, expenses, medical care, housing assistance, even education. All of these are the types of things that you can do within the humanitarian relief. And you know, it's, it could be non-cash or cash. And the cost to operate this is very low. It doesn't require any money at all because you can contribute, like use items if you wanted to do that. And you can do it domestically or internationally. And, you know, the beauty of this is donating these items. If you do it to individuals, it's not going to be tax deductible. But if you donate it to a 501c3, you know, and you donate it to them so that they can support low income individuals or refugees or women and children, and whether it's a cash or non-cash contribution, it's tax deductible doing it through a 501c3 instead of doing it directly to support these individuals. So there are many benefits with setting up, you know, a nonprofit like this. It's easy to set up and operate. You get the tax deductions, and of course, you can make an impact. And this has become the most common, most popular one within Anderson.
All right. And this is a 501c3 that qualifies for the charitable donation. So if I was just helping people, let's say you mentioned soccer balls. So you're providing soccer balls to locals, or I could give some real ones. We have folks that do helmets for kids that ride bicycles and things like that. One very good friend who's a traumatic injury attorney, and he gives away hundreds of these a year. If I give money to that, I get a charitable donation and it's exempt. So if it raises money, if it raises the donations, plus it makes money, let's say it was selling helmets at a discount, it would not have to pay tax on any of that profit.
That's right. Perfect. Yeah. So you get a double benefit with this. Not only you as a donor, you get the tax deduction for making these contributions, but when the nonprofit receives it, it doesn't pay any taxes on these items received.
Perfect. And I could donate, let's say that I had a whole bunch of stuff around my garage or whatever, and I was like, hey, I'm going to donate a bunch of helmets and a bike or two. I could probably write off the fair market value of those items as well, much like if you were giving it to Goodwill.
Yes, you can. You can do that.
Even if it's my organization?
Absolutely, you can. As long as it's being used and the items that you're donating to your organization is going to be used to support and to carry out a charitable purpose of your nonprofit and to support this charitable class that you intend to support.
Yeah, so everybody could go out and do this and go raid your friends, tell them, hey, empty your garage over here. We'll give it away, sell it, whatever. Get it to the right people, and we could do that. Yeah. All right, what's number two?
Number two is education. You know, the previous slide we're talking about assisting low-income families, and that is obviously a great thing and an impact you can make, but it's usually a temporary solution. You know, education is one of those things where you can break the cycle of poverty, you know, dealing with scholarships to help children, low income. It could be children, it could be individuals, you know, providing scholarships to universities, community college, trade schools, you know, IT certification. You know, as I mentioned before, we learn a lot from our clients. And one of our clients, as he told me, the IT certification, the cost to be able to do this online can cost anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 to do. And once you can get the certification, your income can double, you know, from $25 an hour to $45 to $50 an hour. And we see that there's a need for it for women, especially. They're underrepresented in the IT field. So there's a huge demand for it. So this client is offering to cover the expenses for women or individuals who want to get the certification to take the courses to become certified and become an expert in a specific field. So IT certification is very common. Mm-hmm. We have clients who have set up schools to do the HVAC, which is, you know, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, refrigeration. And there's a huge demand for this as well. You know, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial, dealing with diagnostics, service, maintenance and repair, even sales. You know, there's a high demand and there's jobs all over the country. And then welding. And I know, Toby, you've talked with someone who does welding. He has a school for this because there's a huge demand for this. He enrolls thousands of students on an annual basis for the welding because, again, there is a tremendous demand for it. You can build and create objects of metal, you know, work with skyscrapers, rockets, pipelines. You know, welders can work at construction sites, railroads, airplane, aerospace factories, you know, pipelines, electrical plants. Again, there's huge demand for this. So there's scholarships and educational opportunities in this area.
So let me ask you a quick question. So is this one also where I could get a charitable donation for giving to this organization?
Yes, you can. Now, as a student, you know, it's like a university, you're getting mm-hmm. something of value in return. But if you are someone who wants to help an individual to obtain certification or skill in this, and you're donating to support the organization, yes, it's tax deductible. Or let's say, you know, you want to help encourage a student, someone to enroll in there, you can donate to the school as well. And again, it would be tax deductible.
Now, let's say that somebody says, hey, I'm going to set this up and I'm going to create a scholarship program for my kids. You can't do that, can you?
No, you can't. Because if you do it for your kids, it's considered to be pre-selected and the IRS doesn't allow that. And of course, there's the issues of a private benefit going to family members. So, you know, it's not something that we would recommend.
So for all you thinking, oh, I'm going to send all my grandkids to college. Can't do it. You can set it up and help everybody else. But for your family, you know, there's other ways. You could have your grandkids work for your organization and give away money and pay them a salary. And they probably won't pay much tax on it if they're in a lower tax bracket. But that's a topic for another day. Number three
is activities to combat obesity, depression, dependency. You know, it's affecting younger generations addicted to electronic devices. We're also seeing it with those, of course, with obesity. We see it with veterans, recovering addicts as well, even elderly folks, all of these becoming issues. So the organizations that are conducting either social activities, outdoor activities, something to kind of get their minds off of this, you know, from isolation issues and depression, anything from sports, dealing with running, biking, rock climbing. These are all the different types of nonprofits that we have set up, tennis, soccer, and rugby. We've seen a lot for camping, outdoor activities. Social activities are very common. You know, chess keeps your mind on something else and focused on something else. And it can become an addiction as well if working, mm-hmm. playing these sports or doing these sorts of activities. High school mentoring is common. Axe throwing, we have seen that for those with depression. That was popular. That got approved within a week. Ballroom dancing as well was the same thing.
You had axe throwing for depression and you had it approved within a week?
Yes, within a week it got approved.
We need more axe throwing. We need more. If we want to combat depression, teach everybody to throw some axes.
You know, it's a community. It's what it was. It was a community and people coming together and getting together and doing a certain type of activity. So this was one of the activities that they enjoy doing. Never knew that it was such a thing, but it is. Ballroom dancing also got approved within a week. The outdoor activities do tend to get approved very quickly. Animals, it tends to get approved very quickly as well. You know, they're very therapeutic as well, like horseback riding, for example. One with dolphins was therapeutic as well. It got approved quickly.
And this is still you get a write-off. So if I donate to this and I'm still operating it, I could actually write it off as a charitable deduction.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be the equipment. You may donate cash and say, you know, purchase the equipment, purchase yep. these items for others. So you can do this as part of the activities as well.
I do one of these. I have a sanctioning body out here in Vegas. And I always chuckle. Well, sanctioning means that we sanction amateur Muay Thai fights. And it's always fun. You go out there and try to raise some money, but you also have the events and it goes to a good cause. But lots of fun. All right. Number four. I'm going to keep moving you along because we're two lawyers. We could probably talk all day.
All right. There's medical and financial support and research. And it's for those who have certain types of issues, usually medical issues. Again, mm-hmm. learning from clients. We had clients who were victims of traumatic brain injury, TBI. Mm-hmm. You know, some can recover immediately from these injuries, while others have problems living independently, even working, driving, concentrating, remembering new information. So it can put a financial strain on a family where the TBI victim cannot work or acts erratically and requires some medical care. So these are the issues that come up. So they help with activities, you know, to obtain marketable skills, even financial support. And the same thing with those with dementia, disability, special needs, all of these require medical care and medical treatment. There are signs of depression. So try to help them with marketable skills, finding job opportunities, you know, improve with self-confidence as well. So these are the things that a lot of nonprofits will do. And they know it from experience because they have either family members or they know friends who have been experiencing this. So they know how to help them, to guide them, to give them reassurance, to give them some confidence and self-confidence. In addition, we see, you know, for elderly individuals, the medical care, it continues to escalate in terms of medical costs. We see that for sure. Same with dental care. It's very expensive. So there are many dentists who offer this as a free service as they set up an own nonprofit to provide free dental care to patients or individuals who simply can't afford it. Cancer treatment is expensive. We know that. A lot of nonprofits are helping to cover the cost for that. And then, of course, finally, there's the research for cures, treatment, or prevention. That's not as common. And the reason why is because it's not making an impact immediately on individuals to the same degree or the same extent. And it can cost a lot of money to do the research to find the cures and the treatment and prevention as well. So again, learning from a lot of these clients about the things that do work.
And we have a friend and a very good musician that has an MS foundation that again, raises money and goes out and actually does events to raise money to bring awareness on medical conditions, MS in particular. But this is a great one, especially for passion projects and also for doctors who are looking for some tax relief and they want to fund something. This is another great one for them to transition into and even make a living out of as a second career or third career. If they're done maybe grinding it out, maybe they want to do some giving back. This is another place to create a nice landing pad. Number five
is assisting veterans and elderly. You know, both, they don't just need financial assistance. The reality is, especially veterans, they need medical care. They need counseling as well. Some are suffering from PTSD, so they need help with counseling with that. Job assistance, housing, to overcome homelessness. So all of these are very common. So nonprofits come in because they know that the VA is not filling in, providing. So they want to kind of fund that gap of what they're seeing with what the VA provides and what's really needed for veterans. So it's activities to combat isolation and depression, the financial support, the medical support, the counseling, as we mentioned before, about pets and animals, and even housing to help with veterans. And also for elderly as well. We have one nonprofit that flies them in a plane for the elderly, activities, social activities. Another one takes them to see old cars because they love that. They can always connect with stuff with nostalgic things like that. Also bingo social events, at movies, at, you know, activities that keep them socially engaged. So these are the sort of things that we see with nonprofits as well.
We've seen residential assisted living qualifies. Yes. You could do transitional housing. You can do kind of a cool one. We've had a couple of organizations that trained service dogs for veterans. It drops the suicide rate significantly for folks that are high at risk and does some magic stuff there. Sometimes it's not human beings that could reach us. Sometimes it's animals. And all these organizations, again, you could make tax deductible contributions to, and they're exempt from paying tax on their profits and that revenue. So it could be a great win-win if you go out there and really push these things. Yeah. Number six
is housing. You know, it used to be number one for us. That's what we were seeing all the time. And it still is extremely popular for our nonprofit clients. Not only is it helping to assist the poor, the underprivileged, the needy, but recovery residents. It's very common with that. And as you mentioned just a minute ago about elderly and even for veterans, providing housing, residential assisted living for the elderly, and also for victims of domestic abuse. But I'm kind of highlighting here the recovery residents one. As you know, we do a lot of workshops dealing with shared housing. So it's not just housing for one family, but it's housing for many families or individuals. So if you have a 4-bedroom house with 8 beds, you could have housing potentially for 8 people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, typically we'll provide the housing for those who are recovering from addiction. So kind of,
And that's not 8 rooms, by the way, guys. That's 8 beds, which in a lot of jurisdictions, they require, for example, for transitional housing out of incarceration for nonviolent offenders or for drug offenders, they require 2 people per bedroom. And so there's requirements on the size of that bedroom, but you could have 2, sometimes 3 bedroom beds per room. And it's not like you're trying to cram them in there. That's a state requirement or a county requirement or a municipal requirement that says, here's what we will do. And then they'll give you a grant to help your house out. We've had clients that get $75,000, $80,000 a year, plus they get a per bed fee of $800 to $1,000 a month as well from municipalities to do transitional housing. It's just, if you don't believe that's true, we actually teach workshops on it. We've had a number of clients have success in that area. And house, in some cases, hundreds of people. So,
and that's an important thing, as you've said. You know, there's potentially for funding for something like this and get grants. There's referrals from drug courts, other nonprofits, treatment centers as well, even possibly hospitals. All of these organizations will work as referrals to be able to work with you as you provide the shared housing and transitional housing for those in need.
Absolutely. Number 7.
Number 7 is animals. Who doesn't love animals? You know, creating an animal sanctuary. These are all the types that we've seen within Anderson. Mm-hmm. Animal sanctuaries for dogs, for cats, rescue animals, goats, horses, old animals. They want to live their lives out. Circus animals, farm animals. All of these are examples of the types of animal sanctuaries that we've seen. Mm-hmm. And it's not just an animal sanctuary, but as I mentioned before, it's therapeutic. It's for veterans, for children with disability, for elderly, anyone with isolation or emotional issues. This is a great one as well. Very popular, and these get approved very quickly as well as what we've seen. They get approved very quickly.
You go step in and make a difference and get something. Can you take a tax deduction for contributions at all the organizations we've mentioned so far?
Yes, absolutely. They all qualify as 501c3 organizations, but you have to apply for exemption. You have to get the exemption to get the 501c3. So you have to apply. Right. IRS award gives you that 501c3 exemption for that.
Yep. Perfect. Yeah. All right. Number 8.
Number 8 is, we call it miscellaneous. So, you know, all types of different types of organizations, from the arts and the cultural activities to the religious activities, ministry, even church. We have global waste reduction. This one actually got approved very quickly as well. Several of them, you know, waste is dumped in landfill at dump sites or oceans, and the pollution can kill people. So if we do improve packaging of material and improve landfill practices and converting waste to energy, all these are solutions to help reduce the waste. So these are examples of that. Of course, empowering women, children, underserved communities. And now, you know, finally, we're seeing victims of hurricanes, unfortunately, and wildfire and tornadoes. So disaster relief, we like to call it that. And that's what the IRS calls it, is that. These are the types of miscellaneous nonprofit organizations.
Right. And these are still 501c3s eligible for donation plus exempt from tax on any of that revenue or any of the money it makes.
Absolutely. So any contributions you make, whether it's cash or non-cash into the nonprofit, it's tax deductible. Any items that the nonprofit receives, it's tax free. And then you can make these distributions out to any individual and none of them pay any taxes on it either, as you are making distributions to support that charitable class that you intend to serve.
Yeah, I wish I had a nickel for every time somebody came in and they were helping people and they'd been doing it for years, and not small amounts, but you know, in some cases, $50,000, $60,000 a year, they don't get any tax benefit for that. If they set up an organization and did the exact same thing, they could actually get a tax deduction for the amount that they're contributing. They're eventually, depending on how long they do it and whether they're getting any public assistance, will become a private foundation. But when everybody starts, we start them as a public charity and they get these higher amounts, you know, 60% of your adjusted gross income if you make cash contributions, 30% if you are making appreciated asset contributions. But again, there's just so much that you could do to change the treatment of these types of benefits that you might already be providing. So for those of you guys who regularly give and you're helping a lot of folks out and you're doing it and you're not getting any tax benefit, it's always worth a discussion to see whether the formal structure will unlock some of those benefits and whether the benefits outweigh the cost of doing so. Number nine, we're getting close.
Which is a perfect segue to what you just mentioned just now. So we have many clients who are from overseas, and they want to give back to their communities. You know, if you give directly to these communities, and I'm giving examples of orphanages, schools, hospital, scholarships, food, clothing, shelter, like we mentioned before, these are the sort of things you can do and are charitable. But if you give it directly internationally, it's not tax deductible. But if you set up a 501c3 that donates to do these international activities, then it is tax deductible. So that is an important thing to be able to get those benefits. And we actually set one up for a client that had it, that was from India, with a cow sanctuary. And they were giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to help support this internationally. And we're not getting the tax deductions. Mm-hmm. So we set up the 501c3. They got the exemption. And now not only is he, but many of his friends and other folks as well are also donating to this 501c3 to get the tax deduction, as they're going to continue to do the same activities they were doing before. So as you can see, these are all the types of examples. And even water wells is extremely popular. It's fascinating, just the information behind the water wells, of how it can help children stay in school rather than having to walk miles and miles to go to another village to be able to get water, which can take 5 to 6 hours just to be able to get water to bring it back. Just by building a water well in those villages, it removes all of those issues that come up. It's very common in Africa, for example. And the cost for all of these are fairly low, you know, to do these sort of things. But these are the types of international activities that we have seen for nonprofits that want to operate internationally.
And the big takeaway is you got to set them up in the U.S.,
yes.
And then it can do international good. But there's not, hey, I can donate to all these international organizations.
Even if it's charitable activities that they're doing internationally, you don't get a tax deduction unless you do it through a U.S.-based 501c3 organization.
Yep. All right. Number 10, we're getting to the end.
All right. Sorry. Very uninspiring, this one. Just supporting other 501c3 organizations. So your nonprofit can do any of those first nine, and in addition, support other 501c3 organizations that are doing the same types of activities described above. and this is very common, is that we've seen organizations do a combination of these things, of just doing their own activities directly, and in addition, they're supporting other 501c3 organizations that are doing these programs too.
What's the difference between supporting other 501c3s and setting up a private foundation where they have to, they're mandated to give 5% of their assets every year to qualified 501c3s?
Well, if you do it in a public charity, you're not mandated to do that. Within a private foundation that just makes grants to other organizations, you are mandated to have to give 5% of your investment assets that you have that are non-charitable use assets. You have to give it to other 501c3 organizations. And with that, there are restrictions. Yeah, you can't give to international organizations unless you follow specific procedures. Whereas with a public charity, you can do that, but you're not required to give 5%. So you have that flexibility to give however much or however little you want. And in addition to that, again, you can do other types of activities as well.
What if somebody has a housing organization that's a private foundation? Are they required to give away 5% of the house every year, or is it just investment assets, liquid assets?
Yeah, any non-charitable use assets. So if you're using the house for a charitable use and a purpose, then it's not included as part of the 5%. It's just a non-charitable. So typically we say if it's investment property that's just collecting, generating rental income, or if it's investments that you have in stocks and crypto, these are considered to be non-charitable use assets. So you have to use that 5%. So to your point about the real estate, if the real estate is not being used for a charitable purpose, you're just using it for investment purposes. Yes, you have to spend out 5% of what the value of that real estate is. Even if you can't liquidate it, you know, you still have to take that into consideration when it comes to spending 5%.
But most everybody that's doing that, they're not giving away a house just to give away a house. They're giving away a house because it qualifies as for a particular type of housing. Most of the case that I've seen, I can't think of a single one where I've seen them where they just give away rental properties. The rental properties generally qualify as low to moderate income housing. And usually they're setting it up as a public charity anyway, in trying to combat the housing crisis, you know.
And that's what we try to recommend to clients, is that, you know, you see the difference between the private foundation where it has the potential with the restrictions and the public charity where it's a lot more flexible to do that. We say, you know, start off as a public charity, use that. It's going to be easier to comply with. And then if you're not happy with it, we'll reclassify you as a private foundation. But I've never seen that happen.
Yep. Yeah. All right, Kareem, that was very, very helpful. So 10 different activities that qualify, and that is fun. So let's see, that's the list. Children, domestic victims, what is this one?
Yeah, just sort of a summary of who are the charitable groups that were benefiting here, as you can see, you know, as these nonprofits. It's specific ones from the low income to children, victims of domestic abuse. We talked about elderly, veterans. But the bottom one here is the general public. So educational organizations is an example of that. Mm-hmm. So it can be the general public. And in addition, I should mention, you know, we do combine as well, veterans with the animal sanctuary, veterans plus education, for example, affordable housing plus education, because these two things kind of go hand in hand. And we talked about the shared housing. So financial education, social activities, job placement, all of these things are important and integral parts to be able to not only carry out charitable activities, but to help these individuals succeed as well, give them the confidence to be able to succeed.
Okay, so I appreciate it. A lot of people don't realize, but like I always joke, it is true, IKEA is a nonprofit. So I always feel like Harvard is a nonprofit. Major League Baseball is a nonprofit, believe it or not. The Green Bay Packers are a nonprofit organization. There's lots of things where you're like, what? And you start to, when you look at it, you start realizing, yeah, it's not that difficult. As long as you're trying to help any of these groups and you're doing so, that's your purpose, chances are you could reclassify it as a charitable activity. Kareem, if they want to get a hold of you, can I just have them put something like consult in the comments below? If they write in, let's say strategy, let's do that. We'll say, if you type in the word strategy and put it into comments below, we'll reach out and set you up with a discussion with Kareem and his team. Yeah. Will that work for you?
Absolutely. And if you ever reach out to us, you know, by email. Some people do have our email.
We'll put a link.
Say, I loved your video.
Kareem is very sensitive to the comments, guys. He doesn't like it when people make fun of his hair, which I've never seen, but apparently somebody did once and that was it. Like Kareem is on a, went on a bender of some sort. I think he probably, he's a runner. So he probably ran like 50 miles in a day. He was so upset. Yeah. Exactly. Just type in strategy down below. And if you want to, just for fun, put in strategy and what type of activity you would like to do as a nonprofit activity. We'll see it. We'll reach out to you. We'll give you a link so you can set up a consult and see whether it's worthwhile to move it forward and what that looks like, because it's not as hard as everybody thinks and it's very rewarding and we need more people doing good things. Kareem, anything else?
Nah, I think we've covered everything. Did it all.
So. All right, guys. Like and subscribe if you would, if you're on the YouTube channel and if it's a podcast. By all means, if somebody could benefit from this, share it out.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.